probably the most difficult topic that we'll be discussing, arguably. And I have to make a disclaimer at the beginning, we're not going to really get into it as much as we really should, because it's just an impossibility. It's a topic that I spent months and months learning voice in the yeshiva, on a daily basis. It's just, you can't just go over it like this. But go over it we must, because we're going straight. Something that we skip, which aren't relevant. This is very relevant. This is a topic known as ribbis. Ribbis. There's a whole new book on ribbis by Artfeld. I don't have it. I haven't seen it yet, but it's supposed to be very good. If you want to know what to do by ribbis, get the Artfeld book. Or have I read the voice of the yeshiva, on a daily basis. It's just, you can't just go over it like this. But go over it we must, because we're going straight. Something that we skip, which aren't relevant. This is very relevant. It's a topic known as ribbis. Ribbis. There's a whole new book on ribbis by Artfeld. I don't have it. I haven't seen it yet, but it's supposed to be very good. If you want to know what to do by ribbis, get the Artfeld book. Or have I arrived on ribbis. It's supposed to be an excellent book. I would have brought it, but I don't have it. So instead I brought in another book. There's many, many books. There's a book called the Torah's Ribbis. There's so many books. I have my house Torah's Ribbis, and I have Mishnah's Ribbis. And then there's so many books of this nature. This is one of the good ones by the late Rabbi Hirschler, former Levracha, who passed away recently, and his son-in-law. They collaborated to write a book, and it's really a fantastic book. It's a very good index. Very good index, which is, very useful. Ribbis. Ribbis means interest. One is not permitted to either pay or receive interest. Not allowed? Torah prohibits it. The Torah only prohibits what's called ribbis kitsutza. What does kitsutza mean? Kitsutza. Kuf tzadi vav tzadi he. Ribbis kitsutza means a predetermined ribbis. That means I'll give you 100, you give me back 110. Or you'll give me 10% interest a year. Those are called ribbis kitsutza. An interesting question, which could be very relevant, concerning ribbis, which is less than the value of a pruta. You may say that's a ridiculous question. Less than a pruta? Pruta these days is a very small amount of money. How can it be less than a pruta ribbis? A pruta is less than a penny nowadays. How much is a pruta depends upon the price of silver? I believe, if I have it straight, a pruta is about 1,000 of an ounce of silver. Now you may hear the radio, silver today was X dollars an ounce. You heard this morning? Today? No? What is it now? $3 an ounce? What is it now? You hear it every day, probably 5 times. Who pays attention? The gold fixing was this, the silver fixing was that. Who cares? Well, I think it's around $3. I mean, I have no idea. So if it's $3, just move over 3 decimal points, right? What does that take you to? No, who's going to bear? I'm trying to account this here, no? They go to 3 decimal points. They get 3/10 of a penny, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So it's less than a penny. So it used to be, there was a big crisis in Halacha. A crisis, that depends to whom. There was a major, I don't know if you ever read about it, probably too young to remember it. The Hunt brothers from Texas, they drove up the price of silver. They artificially inflated the market to the point that silver went up as high as $50 an ounce. Azam in bluff. It was all based on bluff and bluster. $50 an ounce. If silver's $50 an ounce, then a pruta was worth 5 cents, a nickel. So you had to have a nickel just to get to should be considered a pruta. It's wild. Wild. It collapsed, boom, like all these things do. Some of my shul has something to do with the collapse. I won't go into that part of the story. It's an interesting story. And so it went down again to, you know, it's relevant because, you know, when you, let's say on Pesach, you sell to the goy, you want to get a pruta for each member of your community, buy the chametz. So you have to give you a nickel for each person. That's what's going on. Unbelievable. Now it's down to a penny a person. You know, you need even less than that. But who cares? When do we have rivers less than a shava pruta? It's wild. I'll tell you what you have. Maybe. Following case. A corporation. A bank. A bank. Very simple case. You give credit card. Let me ask a question. Who here has a credit card? Raise your hand. I think I already touched the popular core. So if you don't pay all your chayvus up right away, which you should, by the way, it's a good idea for many reasons. But you know how it is. I don't have to tell you. So they give you an interest. They charge you, 18% of crazy price gouging chutzpah, zela, whatever it is. You're but it's illegal. So you'd have to pay. So it costs your interest for a month on your $100 outstanding bill for your Visa card. It costs you an annual rate of, who knows, $20. It costs you $2. $2 a month on the month. Okay, so pay $2 interest. Now, who owns Visa? Who owns those? Probably, so you have Chase Visa. But not Chase, it's a public corporation. It's Chase, Chemical, I don't know, I can't keep track of all these mergers and everything. But they're all owned by the people. Who are the people? Jews and non-Jews alike. Some poskim maintain, whenever you have corporate funds, you know, partnership of this nature, we follow the majority. And since the majority are goyim, so we consider the whole Chase as a goyim. Chase is a goyim. Chase would be called Rockefeller. A guy, that's all. Then they have no problem at all. You're allowed to pay rivers to a guy. Other posts would disagree. So what kind of business? Who said so? Who said so? They're Jewish partners. You're giving some of them, you're giving them rivers too. So if the Jewish, let's say the Jews constitute, for argument's sake, 10% of the owners of the corporation. You pick a number. So they're giving $2 interest, you're giving 20 cents interest to Jews. Gewalt. Much more than a shabbat food even in Hunt's time. So what do you do? So what occurred to me is that one possible leniency, among others, and everyone agrees to this, is that you're giving each, there's no Jew who's going to get more than a pruta of your interest. True, you said you're going to give, 20 cents to all the Jews, but there's so many Jews, there are hundreds of Jews who own Chase. None of them owns enough of the company that your interest bill will amount to a pruta, even if a pruta is only 0.3 cents, for that party. I'm talking about local, you know, small customers. If you're a multi-million dollar customer, this is not going to work for you. You have $100 in your credit card. It's not going to be one single Jew who's going to get a pruta's worth of interest from you. Not everyone agrees that less than a pruta is not part of the Torah's prohibition. Some say it's a Torah prohibition, and some say it is a rabbinical prohibition. Big question. This is giving you an example of how this could be relevant to you. Now you're permitted to take rivers from a guy. Torah says it's only between brothers, between fellow Jews, but a guy you may collect rivers from. there's an interesting question today. What if someone is Jewish, but he conducts himself as a goy? Which means he is completely detached from Torah mitzvahs. He could be even intermarried, could be even converted to Christianity. So this is a big dispute. Can you take ribbis from such an individual? Okay, so these are some of the rules and regulations of what kind of ribbis is prohibited by Torah law. By rabbinical law, ribbis is prohibited. What's the matter? What's wrong? What is wrong? When I don't give an answer, it's inconclusive. There's a dispute, and I don't know who's right. Rabbinical law prohibits ribbis even if there's no formal ketzitza. It wasn't predetermined. You may not collect ribbis, which is called ribbis derabonim. Ribbis is also called avak ribbis. Avak means like the dust of ribbis, not real ribbis. You may not collect it. The lover, the borrower, is not in violation concerning avak ribbis. Concerning real ribbis, ribbis is alright, ribbis katuta, the admonition, the prohibition applies to both the borrower and the lender. But ribbis derabbanan, they only impose a prohibition against the lender, not upon the borrower. Nevertheless, they have what we call lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. That means that the borrower is causing the lender to lend that money in a prohibited fashion is in violation of lifnei iver. We discussed lifnei iver, I believe, last week. The kind of avodah zarah. That you're causing someone else to do something wrong. The difference might be what will happen in a case in which the person will do something wrong anyway, or in which a case in which there is a dispute whether something is allowed or not allowed. And some rabbis say it's allowed, but you don't want to rely on them for yourself. Because you're not the lender, you're the borrower. So then there's no lifnei iver because the person who's doing it has a basis. There are certain differences which are relevant to this discussion. What is ribbis derabbanan? A case in which there was no premeditation. Just I borrowed $10, I'll give you back $11. You didn't ask me for $11. I mean, there was no, wasn't made up in advance, I'm going to pay $11. I'll just give you an extra, I can pay back an extra dollar. Now, the major difference exists between ribbis min haTorah and ribbis derabbanan. Major difference. If it's ribbis min haTorah, even after the ribbis is collected, it must be returned. The malveh, the creditor, must return the extra money to the lover, to the borrower. However, if it's ribbis derabbanan, then there's no need to return it. In other words, if it's already been paid, then there's no obligation upon the malveh to return it to the loan. Yes.
So where does the problem of lifnei iver come in? Because if the borrower is allowed to pay a ribbis derabbanan, so if he pays it and the lender accepts it, then he doesn't have to give it back. So
No, he does not give it back. At the moment that he accepted, he was in violation. Big difference. You had no right to take it. Once he took it, so then you cannot force the malva to give it back.
So if he doesn't catch it at first, when it's being given to him, when the lender is receiving the money that was borrowed from him, and he doesn't notice, he just doesn't notice at first, the borrower slipped, like, let's say by way of a shaliach, so he doesn't see it at first, right? So he accepts it. So once he accepts it, that's it, it's his. I mean, was he over on anything, though?
If the malva wants to be a good fellow, he should give it back. What's called, let's say, Sidei Shemayim. He should give it back. But he doesn't have to. Let me tell you a story which just will wake you up a little bit. We go a little further. Unbelievable story happened to me. I think when it happened. I think it was sometime during last year, I believe. The people often have din Torah. The din Torah is a monetary dispute between parties. And according to halacha, din Torah should be resolved in a beis din, not in court, not in a gun court. So sometimes Rabbanim and the yeshiva form what we might call an ad hoc beis din. We just get three rabbis together, we sit on the case, and we try to give an honest answer. Well, very, very wonderful rabbi from New Jersey referred to the following case. There was a dispute between two people in his own shul, a lender and a borrower. Apparently the borrower was not paying the money that he's supposed to pay, and the lender was getting very upset. So we had to come to a din Torah. So we listened to the din Torah, and our ears are popping out. The plaintiff speaks first, the lender. He had all the records there. He's been lending out money to this borrower for years and years and years. I think 3, 4, 5, a lot, many years. Big sums of money. I mean, big sums of money. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Probably millions of dollars over the years. And he was collecting, you're not going to believe this now, 15% interest. Day in, day out. He had records of every penny he collected in interest. And he went through the calculation. It was interest on compounded interest, the stuff's kind of staggering and going bigger and bigger and bigger. And he has big claims against his fellow. His fellow stopped paying him nine months before we had the case. So he was very angry why I didn't pay him back even the principal anymore. And he's angry why I didn't pay him the interest until that point, and it's been accruing since that point. So he has a claim, I think, of $300,000 against the defendant. If I'm not mistaken, I should have brought the papers with me. I believe it was over $300,000 his claim. We're not talking about small change over here. That was his claim. In the context of the conversation, it turned out that aside from all the loans to the defendant, he had once lent money to the defendant's brother. The defendant's brother is a rabbi, and when he lent the money to the defendant's brother, he utilized something which we'll discuss later called Heter Iska. Heter Iska means a device which the rabbis had created to permit the equivalent of the collection of interest in a permissible fashion. It means it's converted to a business deal. We'll come to that. I brought forms for you. I'll show you later on. So we asked him, excuse me, sir, but you knew about Heter Iska. The brother only borrowed with Heter Iska, so why didn't you use Heter Iska for this other fellow? He's also Jewish. The lender shakes his head. The borrower shakes his head. This is a violation of both of them. Just didn't do it. Now he comes with an incredible kind of a din Torah. A wants $300,000 from B. He said, well, B, what do you say? What do you say, Mr. B? Well, it's not really this much money because $50,000 goes off here, $30,000 goes off here, $20,000 goes off here, blah, 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 blah. They knocked it down to a mere $100,000. They were fine by $200,000. Well, wait a minute. According to the strict halacha, this is Rivas Katutza. Instead of A wants the money from B, to the tune of $300,000. It seemed to the court, to the Bezdin, that it was the opposite. That really, you're not going to believe this, A wanted $300,000 from B, but B could have claimed $200,000 or $300,000 from A in interest payments that he had paid over the years. By A's own admission. Now, just imagine this boomerang. A is walking in there, he's going to make easy, cool 300 G's. Just imagine you have to pay 300 G's. Oh my gosh. We didn't know what to do. So there is a halacha that if the person a person paid ribis. He paid it. So it's supposed to go back, we said, from the malva to the lova. What if the lova forgave the malva? After the money was paid, he forgave it. So the malva owed a debt to return the ribis, and the lova forgave it. So Shulchan Aruch said that forgiving is valid. But it's very complex how you define forgiveness. Every case of ribis is forgiveness, quote unquote. That's the deal. So obviously that forgiveness doesn't count. It has to be an additional formal act of forgiveness subsequent to the payment of the interest. So we weren't sure. The fact that the debtor was negotiating with the creditor and say, I'll pay $100,000 instead of $300,000, and at one point in the proceedings, the debtor yelled out, hey Sam, the guy was Sam, maybe you owe me money, because I've been giving you interest. Wow. We did not know what to do. So we called him in. This is a fascinating din Torah. Usually din Torah is on the side. We never bother calling the people back. We faxed them the result. We sent it in the mail. We sent it to the rabbi. Here we felt we were compelled to call in both parties. Our first question was to the debtor. He said, you know, you made this statement last time. You know, maybe Sam owes you money. Yeah, that's right, maybe. So we, the Bezdin, are asking you that in case Sam owes you money, that you hereby forgive the debt. Wash it up. Wash it up. Right? He goes, why should I? All of a sudden he became, he sees a pot of gold. Why should I? So he said, you don't have to. We just think it's a good idea. If you do, we'll give you the psak. Psak was printed up and face typed out, you know, face down on the table. If you don't, we're not going to give you the psak. Now he's gone nuts. What should he do? What does he smell the rat? What should he do? Should he forgive the money? Should he not forgive the money? He wants to get a psak, not a psak. He doesn't know what to think. And you know, his rabbi is there. His rabbi is going to have enough sorrows as it is with this creditor, who's expecting 300 G's. The guy goes outside, he paces the floor back, he goes, give me time to think about it. Pacing the halls back and forth. Finally back, okay rabbi, rabbis, I forgive the debt. Read the sign of relief, okay, here's the psak. The psak was, nobody owed anybody a penny. He asked for $300,000. The guy was basically willing to pay $100,000. And we said, no debt. The creditor turned so white. Like you know, his face was as white as his light. That's how white he got. And he started to, can you imagine this? He's asking for 300 G's. The guy's willing to pay him 100 G's, at least initially. And then zip, zero, zilch. So the rabbi's trying to think of a value. And the heart condition is afraid about it. He's trying to explain to what a tremendous favor we're doing for him. Because until now he was collecting rivers illegally. That's Shama Shabbos guy. He's come to shul every single day. So he asked the rabbi, what happened? He stopped coming to shul. I don't know what happened at the end. I have to check up again to see what happened. He was so upset by this psak. He explained to him, doing a tremendous favor. How, if he would not put his psak, he'd cast the shalom be guilty of having collected ribis. And the Gemara said such terrible things about someone who collects ribis. He doesn't get come up to Tchias HaMesim. He's just not going to live when all the dead will come back to life. He won't come back to life. The famous story of Akiva Eger. Was a terrible usurer who collected money with ribis. And he was very sick and about to die. So the people in town, all of whom had been victimized by this usurer, came to him. The Rabbanim came to him. The Chevra Kadisha came to him. He's about to die. He said, listen, mister, we know that you've collected in your lifetime $1 million in interest. You have it lying in your bank. Give it back. Now you can't take it with you. You're not going to have to go to... How much can you spend? That's it, you're gone. I mean, he's here very sick. Give it back. Someone who is tight-fisted, till he's dead, he will never open up his hands. Doesn't think about it. A person is born, his fist like this, and dies with his hand like this. But until he dies, like this. He couldn't let go of the money. They said, if you don't give back the money, We're not going to bury you. Pretty potent threat, no? Didn't get back the money. Didn't get back the money. Died. So the relatives came to the Chevra Kadisha. We want a burial plot. Sure, $1 million. So these guys were very infuriated. They went to the magistrate. Said, we don't understand. This rabbi is trying to rip us off. Usually a plot costs $1,000. It's costing us $1 million. So the rabbi was hauled before the magistrate. What are you doing? Discriminatory practices. It's illegal. Your Honor, let me explain to you what's happening over here. We Jews believe that the dead will come back to life. So when we bury somebody, it's really only a temporary situation. So we charge $1,000 because how long is it going to be there? A few hundred years until Mashiach comes or Mashiach Mason. We charge a discount price of $1,000. But our tradition tells us that somebody who gives money with usury, he's never going to come up with Mashiach Mason. That means there's going to be a permanent there forever and ever. It's $1 million. So the rabbi, he said, that's it. What can I say? Gotta get back the money. That's how the story goes. But you see how serious it was. We told the story over to this guy. We're saving you. We're saving you. Now you're going to come up with Chiesa Mason. He was fulminating and he was screaming, murmuring. What can he do? He had written a piece of paper that he accepts the sack of the bed and then he thinks it's acceptance, even valid in secular court, they had no recourse. That's the Torah that we have. You see how people who are frum come to minyan every single day, and they violated Issam and Torah of Ribbis. It's a tragedy. You know what the problem is? People have this crazy mentality. How can I summarize it in three words? Business is business. As I leave my life as an Orthodox Jew, a shul, and a house, and but business is business. A separate thing. Chas v'shalom. We don't believe in that. Business is business according to halacha, not according to the way other people are doing it. But I'm just giving an example of an actual real life case that we had last year. Wow. Yes?
What about taking inflation into account when
you do something? Not allowed. If you borrow $100 and you pay it back at an inflation rate of 10%, you want to give back $110? He's not getting anything. Well, take a different case. I have money in the bank. The bank gives me 10% of my money. And you want to borrow the money. So I take it out of the bank. I give it to you. You give it back with 10%. I gain nothing. Because the money would have been in my bank account. Right? The bank I'm allowed to take money from. So the bank is goyish. And another problem. What if the bank is Chase? Chase, once again, is a public corporation. So here, too, the general assumption is you're allowed to take money from the bank because we follow the majority. With respect to Chase, is another leading consideration. As Rav Moshe has a tshuva, that he feels it's permissible to take ribbis from corporations. You can't give ribbis to corporations, you may take from corporations. What's his logic? There's no personal liability. He maintains that ribbis exists only when there's personal liability. And if it's a company, limited liability, he maintains there's no ribbis to take from them. Most poskim argue with Rav Moshe that there is a prohibition. Some say it's rabbinic, some say it's a Torah prohibition. But nonetheless, even though most argue, it's another reason to express leniency, combined with the fact that Chase is owned mostly by goyim. So the custom is that we take money from Chase. Most of the custom even to give money to Chase, but certainly to take is a bit more lenient. So I would have been taking the money from Chase. Now why can I take it from Chaim? The answer is no. You're not allowed to do that. It's called rivers. I'm sorry, I can't help it. Called rivers, even if you would have been getting it from some other source. Yes? Why rivers is also? Why rivers is also? The Torah wants, if you lend money to a Jew, you should do it as a gemilas chesed. You should do it for no extra price. Gemilas chesed means the gemach. I give you 100, give me back 100. Ribbis is considered injurious to the body. He has no choice. He has more of a barrel. He has no alternative. He has to pay for his bread. And then you're taking extra money for it. Not right?
Have
the risk. We're coming to that.
Heter iska means that we take all of our loans and convert them into business deals. We'll discuss that at some length. Heter iska. Okay? Okay. Let's say someone lends you money. Are you grateful for the money? You want to give him a present? But you know that with Mr. Rivers, you can't give him a present while the money is being is out on loan. So you give it, you prepay the present before the loan, or more likely, you give the present after the next day or the next week, after the loan has already been returned. Not allowed. Some say it's only not allowed if you say explicitly, I'm giving you this gift, I'll give you I'll buy you a book, I'll buy you flowers, I'll buy you chocolate, whatever, tchotchke, if you say it's because of the loan. But some say, but if you don't say anything, it's okay. Others disagree and say that it's pretty clear, even if you don't say anything, that it's no good. And some say even if you say it's a present, it's a gift, not doing anything, it might still be no good. So therefore you should be very careful. Don't give any gifts. You shouldn't give a gift, that's all. It's going to be interpreted as having something to do with the loan. But there's a long, long time elapses. It's called the Zman Mufla, a long time, and you don't say explicitly that it's because of the loan, then it's all right. How long is long? It's subjective. If it's a year later and it's a small loan, you know, it depends if it's a big loan, a small loan, a big time, a small time. You can't put a definitive number on it. Yes.
What if someone says you can start taking off and then and you bring it over to cash and how much was it? And
you said
$3.24, and you just say it's $3. Are you causing them to be over
on
the
over? You tell them $3.
Like, it costs more than that, but whatever,
you
just gave
$3. Okay, that's not right. This was never a loan. I'm not considered to be a loan. You weren't lending money. That's not how that's considered to be a loan. There's so many complicated cases you have to analyze. Is there a loan? Is there no loan? It's very, very complex. It really is. Very complex. Very difficult. Some of them are cases where you're not exactly sure how much you borrowed. This could be in the case of money or in the case of objects. I borrowed a cup of sugar. So I'll give back a cup of sugar. How old was the cup full? Was it full? How much? You know, I give an extra grain of sugar. Boom. Ribbis. Ribbis not only money. So there are possible people maintain it. If you're not sure, you're allowed to give a little extra just to make sure you're giving enough. And you tell the creditor that if there's more than I borrowed, the remainder should be a gift. Not supposed to give gifts, but he has no alternative. You're not exactly sure what it is. Let's have no change. Your case. I have no change. I only have a big dollar, a big bill. I don't have change. You're not permitted to do it. You're not permitted to do it. You can't give, you know, I don't have change. I borrowed from you, let's say, for argument's sake, $19. I only have a 20 and you don't have any change. I cannot give you the $20 and pay for the 19. Not permitted. Not allowed. But, and this is coming from Diane Weiss from the Eden Haredes, but I can make a deal. Here, take $20 and give $1 to the stuff. You know, give it my permission, give it to Stucker, from whatever Stucker I want, something like that. That he says is alright. Well, it's better not to. Better give back the $19. No, you shouldn't play with this. It's not a good idea. Yes?
What if, okay, that's straight into the person, you say, look, you borrow $1 from someone, you say, okay, I'll pay you back, and the person goes, ugh. They don't say forget about it. Do you have to, like, say,
that's
can you say forget about it?
I don't know what the word ugh means. There's people often with different things.
That really happens a lot.
Can I answer the question? More than, yes?
Is it considerable, like in everything life, you know, you go to a sister and a friend of yours, she puts out the money for you.
She pays for you?
She puts it out for you, whatever, you don't have money. And then
but she treats you. That's not a loan.
You owe it back.
You owe it back to him, then it could be a small
loan. So then also, you know, if it's 319, whatever you give it to $3,000, all the time you're claiming it, so...
Just try not to do it. You're not even permitted to get... Yeah,
like, let's say you're shipping it on your own day, but it would be
I don't think it's a loan. Less than shadow food is a dispute. Some say it is prohibited. We can buy Torah laws. That's not going to work. Just try to avoid it. Not only is there a prohibition of giving extra money to the Malveh, even what's called ribis devarim, even saying certain things. Say, here, I lend you $100. You give back $100. Say, Chaim, you're the greatest. You're a great guy. You're fantastic. You're terrific. He feels all good. Ribbis! Ribbis tomorrow, not allowed. Some posts can say you can't even say thank you.
When
you pay back a debt, you shouldn't even say thank you. See, right? Don't say toda. Don't say yashakaya. To the creditor. That's considered to be the category of ribis devarim. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, according to the Rocha, says that you're allowed to say thank you. That's nothing. That's Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Arba, according to the Rocha.
It's just thank you.
He says a thank you is okay. You know what the custom they give over here? Thank you for the tircha. What does tircha mean? The father. Whenever you lend someone money, aside from giving them the money, it's a pain in the neck. They reach into your pocket, pull out a dollar bill, and then you'll go take it back. So you let it, sometimes you let it thank him for the tircha. But that's okay. You can't thank him for the money. You're not allowed any benefit from the fact that your money was in someone's hands for a period of time. The tircha. You can't even say hello to somebody. If you borrowed money from him, if you wouldn't have said hello otherwise. Can you imagine that? That hello is, I feel a little nice. Look at this. He never said hello before. I wonder why he's saying hello all of a sudden. I bet you. He doesn't want me to go get the money so fast. You know, he's saying hello to me. Great. That's ribbis. There are all kinds of questions. You know, if someone has me $10,000, I can't pay him back extra money, I'll do you a favor. I'm a rabbi, I'll learn with your son. Free bar mitzvah lessons. No good. Ribbis.
Isn't that a gift?
No, ribbis. I'm doing something I wouldn't have done otherwise, it's called ribbis. Yes. No, it only applies when they sell less than money. It's a loan. No loan, you say. It's no problem. Yeah. What are they saying? I think it's Shakespeare. Either lend them or borrow me. Now you know why. You can get these little rivers are so complicated.
Yeah, you're really good at this.
So many details as long as this is forever. Let's say I have a neighbor. And you know, he borrows my car, I borrow his car, he's a good neighbor. Now he lends me money. I'm permitted to still borrow his car. So I would borrow his car anyway. It's not nothing to do with the loan problem. What if the loan is the gabbai and shul? Can they give the malveh an aliyah?
So
he can give him an aliyah the same way he could have given him otherwise. He can't give any extra special treatment. Yes? You're not even supposed to borrow food at all. The reason being that we're afraid that the price will change. So when you give back the food the next week, you'll be giving back $3.10 for a $3 item. Because the price will go up.
It's not so simple.
Less.
You really shouldn't borrow. It's called saw for saw, measure for measure of food.
If you borrow from somebody, you cannot give
it
back.
I'm saying more than that. Not only should you give it back, you shouldn't borrow in the first place. The question is, can you even give it back the same amount as it went up in price? The post can say that it's just a bunch of neighbors and a small amount of money, so they know it's just a matana, it's not really a loan. That's the cool that we use for a cup of sugar. You throw the eggs, meaning it's to be made on the ground, but we know, we realize that that's garnished. But beyond that, it's a problem. You shouldn't borrow food. Now, a lova is permitted to pay certain expenses that the malva has. For example, insurance expenses, or pay for the document, pay for a lawyer, these kind of things. So that's this, okay, it's not rivers, it's just paying the actual expenses. So buying a bank check may have certain expenses. And per check, they charge 10 cents a check now. Like, what they call it, a quarter of a check? So you can pay me for the quarter. But that, I'm giving you a $100 check, it's costing me $100.25. So you give me back 25 cents then. That's out of pocket expenses from my pocket. Gets very hairy. Let's say I have a bank account and they have a deal. I like another bank. If a minimum balance, then they don't charge you for a check and for this and for that. You know how it goes. And if you don't have a minimum balance, then they throw the book at you, right? They charge per check and per month and for this and for that. And now, because I lent this guy money, I don't have the minimum balance. Can I not charge him for all my bank expenses? Not so simple. I don't know. He talks about something called Mas Machzor. I'm not sure what that means here. I don't know what this means. Give me an example of a question I'm not sure the answer myself. I don't know. There's so many details over here. You got this amazing case. You have a CD, you know, 10 years. And you take out the money early, they penalize you severely, right? And you know what they add? Penalty for early withdrawal, right? So he has to lend the money. And what happens to the CD? So I take it out, they can take $1,000, right? You lose a lot of money if you take it out early, right? Am I right? So I lose $1,000. So you're right here, maybe you can pay me back. Because I lost the money because I wanted to lend it to him. Not even sure. So if he's not sure, how am I supposed to be sure? There's so many different nuances in these cases. He thinks it should be okay. Let me give my exact case. Yes,
listen. Back to what we were saying about with food, with lending food because the price changes. I don't really understand it. Why wouldn't we say the same thing then about, let's say, money? I mean, the value of
dollar. Very good question. Hex, then money goes up and down. You hear that in the great newspapers, money's going up, money's going down. The answer, the amazing answer. Who's in finance over here? So I sit students here, finance. Well, you're in money, what do you say?
Marketing.
According to the halacha, there's only one official recognized standard. That's money. Money. We don't say that it is inflation. And every price in the world goes up.
You know, I had double-digit inflation some years back. You must have learned about that. I had double-digit inflation, 20, we have crazy inflation. So everything's going up 10, 15% the change in price. You borrowed 100, you get back 100. That's it. Even at 100, you get back a year later, can't buy what it used to buy. Down 20, 15% a year later. Too bad. Money is money is money. That's why people didn't want to lend out money. There's such a galloping runaway inflation. Then it's the money. You lose your pants. I mean, before you turn around, you get killed. Because it's such inflation. Too bad. But you can't just say, because I lost some inflation, you have to give me back $115. Doesn't work. Not allowed. Yes?
Does anyone use a guy as a middleman? Say, I'm lending
it's
you.
It's really complicated. I lend to a guy, I go necessarily to another Jew. There are certain cases when that's mutter, but it's very complicated.
People do have done it.
I guess so. Complicated, didn't it? I'm skipping after the halachas here, but just even what we're doing. Very complicated. Amazing case, he quotes. I don't pay back my debt on time. Supposed to pay back, I don't pay back my debt on time. As a result, the creditor gets hit with a banking expense, because you know, he's a, what do you call it today? Overdraft? Meshichas Yeser.
Overdraw.
Overdraw, right. The literal trend is overdraw. Meshicha is the draw, the pull. And Yeser is, he's overdrawn. Why am I overdrawn? I don't figure it out. I know I'm a yekid. I haven't exactly figured it out. Like this. And part of my judgment is, you pay me when you said you pay me. But you didn't. Now I'm all of a sudden overdrawn. And they hit me with a... The bank, Chase Bank, hits you with a Rivers charge. It's your fault! amazing case, he quotes. I don't pay back my debt on time. Supposed to pay back, I don't pay back my debt on time. As a result, the creditor gets hit with a banking expense, because you know, he's a, what do you call it today? Overdraft? Mishichas Yeser.
Overdraw.
Overdraw, right. The literal trend is overdraw. Mishicha is the draw, the pull. And Yeser is, he's overdrawn. Why am I overdrawn? I had all figured out. I know, I'm a yekin. I have it exactly figured out. This. And part of my judgment is, you paid when you said you'd pay me. But you didn't. Now I'm all of a sudden they overdrawn. And they hit me with a... The bank, Chase Bank, hits me with a Rivers charge. It's your fault. You made me overdrawn. Some poskim say he's allowed to pay me. Because he's causing the expenses. Not everyone agrees, but some say it that way. And this leads to the next question. Someone is late in payment. Doesn't pay on time. Can I impose what we call a penalty? Not interest, Chas v'Shalom. A penalty. What's the difference, exactly? So he passes over here that a penalty really shouldn't be done. It's considered like rivets. Not real rivets, but it's like rivets. But it looks the same.
Is there anyone who says you can't
pay
a penalty?
Some say as follows. That if it's not cash, you're going to pay back objects. If you don't pay me back by a certain time, you pay a penalty, you have to give me a 50 pounds of meat, I don't know, something like that. Some say that might be permissible, it doesn't really look so much like ribbons. Here we come to all these wild cases, which you know happen day in and day out. Remember, this is a day in, day out question. What if you pay in advance for an object? Pay in advance. I'll pay you today X dollars, and you'll give me food or furniture, clothing down the road by a certain time. You don't do it. So we can make a deal not to give a certain penalty. That the seller can give a penalty to the buyers if he doesn't give him the object that he's supposed to give it to him on time. What's the difference over here? To get a penalty? Yeah, but it's not a penalty, but derech halva. There's a big difference in halacha between derech halva and derech mechira, in the matter of a loan or the matter of a sale. Is the matter of a sale. Similarly, you sell on credit. You sell on, I give you this stuff right away, and I say I'll pay you in 30 days. We can make a deal. If you don't pay in 30 days, you'll have to pay extra. There's a penalty. Why? What's the difference? Again, because it was never a loan. It's only kind of to a sale. So the rule is penalties are not allowed for loans, but they are allowed for other situations. Sale. But that's only one time penalty. It doesn't work on an ongoing percentage basis. In other words, you'll say if I don't pay in a month, you pay 10% interest. That's not allowed. It's only once. But, listen carefully now. So I make a deal. If you don't pay me in a month, you pay a $10 penalty. And the guy agrees, doesn't pay. You bum! Give me the $10. If you don't pay me the next month, another $10 penalty. It's okay. Because each time they're making the deal all over again. Yes?
Okay. What is going to be a big problem with the way that the cap cards work in the school?
Cap card?
Yeah, because if you have $100 credit left over on your card, they keep it. And yes, we agree to this, but we're not given any choice in the matter. They say if you
don't... And they say sale of it, not rivers.
It's a penalty. It really is.
Why the rivers? It's sale of. Kenny is going to buy cookies.
Yes, you
can. I heard about that from one of the comedians. The guy went back the last day and bought 10,000 cookies, you know, because he had to use up the money.
Yes, you could do that, but if you don't eat cookies, I mean.
And they spoil.
So what do they have there? Other things. Don't they have other things that you can buy?
Yeah, but how much?
Soda. Don't buy 10 cases
of soda. To be in this situation, how obviously there's nothing. I mean, this isn't doing it out of the goodness of your heart.
I think, in my opinion, a school can make up any deal they want. You don't like it, so go to a different school. They jack up the tuition by 2%. What are you going to do? Go do something. What are you going to do about it? Say you want a $22 million fellowship. But they won't give it to you. Yeah. You mentioned before you shouldn't... lend out, I'm sorry, yeah. That's a big problem. Ooh, wow. Student loans, that's a problem. Student loans, hold on a second. Whoa, that's the problem. Who is YU? Is YU Jewish or Goyish?
Jewish.
They claim to be the largest university, the only university in the Jewish auspices. Right, but they got a $22 million in the first place. Right. So what's a corporation? You're paying, you're not a corporation. You're paying money to a Jewish corporation, which is a no-no, not allowed. So what do you do? It's a big problem. So the government is involved somehow or other. But it's the government is just providing YU with the money, and the YU gets the money and lends it out to you. It's not so simple. It seems to me that you are not allowed to take a student loan unless you're what they call a heter iska, which we'll discuss later.
I think it does say.
I think someone make sure it puts in the law. One of the, it was a total about it a few years ago. It was down to the heter iska. We'll see if it works or not. We'll come to that. You mentioned before that neighbors could borrow objects from each other. Here's examples. Bread, eggs, vegetables. You could borrow an asimov, a stamp, a notebook, a pen. To try to give exactly what you took. Try not to give any more. Yes.
What if you always borrow
things
that
they
always
rent
from
the UK, but you won't call that thing? Okay. Should you borrow? Okay. I borrow apples to get back apples. How can I not bring the apple? You wave the apple before you borrow it.
Take it.
Small amount, we assume that we can be lenient. That's the general assumption. Other cases are complicated. When you're allowed to lend out objects, but it's not a small amount. I'm not going to go into it now. It's very complicated. You mentioned selling on credit. That's another big issue. You're not permitted, according to the Shulchan Aruch, to give two prices, cash and credit. Every guest that you have. Yeah, not everything. Cash and credit. You see that? But the gas station is Goyish, okay? Doesn't make a difference. But if it's a Jewish gas station or partnership, if you want to be machmor on that question, so you have to pay cash? Because you pay credit, you're paying ribbis, yes?
Meaning, when someone says you
need to
pay me cash, I'll charge you less?
Little gas station,
you're
gonna get gas?
Let's say, let's go to a food store.
That's a different story. Oh, that's a different story. They're talking about taxes. That's a different story. There, the trick is, if it's off the books, you know, it's off the books, the government doesn't know about it, they don't have to pay taxes, they'll charge you less money. That's a complicated, nothing to do with rivers. That's a complicated question, it's nothing to do with rivers. That's cash or check, that's nothing to do with credit. Anyway, you shouldn't have two prices, for now and for later, all right? Even if you bluff it and say that the credit card price is the real price and the cash price is a discount. Pretty sharp, huh? Good try, but it doesn't work. That's right, it doesn't work. However, if it's really a discount, honest to goodness, you know, sale price, a real sale. And, you know, cheaper than a normal price, you pay cash, that's okay. Because you really go up beneath the regular price, for real. Some don't even like that. Here's a question. Can you attribute the additional price, the higher price later, not to the time lag, which is prohibited, but to a tircha or to extra expenses which are incurred? In other words, let's say, for example, you use a credit card, and it's expenses because, you know, gas to go, labor price has to go, to write it down and go push through that thing there, and you have to give a piece of paper, and then to give it to the credit company, it's a big hassle, give the guy cash. Save time, save hassle, save this. Can we attribute the difference in price to the hassle?
Service fee.
Service fee, yeah, something like that, service fee. So, if indeed there's a lot of tircha, then it'll be all right. It has to be legit. But if you spell it out, that's a problem. Because, you know, often you're spending too much. More than you can attribute to what we call the tip. Every case has to be analyzed separately. Starting on the installment plan is the problem for this reason. You lease a car can be a problem. So you want to lease a car here? If you lease a car to buy a car, it's a problem. You lease a car, so what are you doing? You're paying for the month, and at the end you end up buying it for it costs you more money because you didn't pay all the money up front. Watch out. At least if we buy it from good client, so we're more lenient. As I said before, if you pay less for advance payment, there are certain leniencies.
Can you apply to a landlord in a house?
Mm-hmm. After that. So this could be certain problems. gives examples. I order furniture by a carpenter. So how do you handle this? When do you pay? So it's complicated. You can try to arrange it to pay it part of it in advance for the raw materials, and part later on for the work. What about amazing? I'm sure everybody here in this room who's an Eretz Yisrael bought a Kartisia. Get on the bus. Hey, that's not legal. Because you're paying in advance, because you're paying in advance, it's going to get cheaper. So how do you buy a Kartisia? They have these Xeroxing cards. They have a yeshiva, no? You want to use the Xerox machine, so you pay in advance.
15 cents, but I get a
10
on the card.
There it is, boom. That's cool, Ribbis. Hey, what's going on over here?
How is it Ribbis? I don't understand.
He says it's Muslim. Why is it Muslim? That's okay. Why should it be Muslim?
Why should it be us, sir? I don't understand why it's us.
What do you mean? You're giving me for cheaper because I'm paying you in advance. That sounds like it's Ribbis, right?
But it's Mechira, it's not...
But it's
not.
It's
not.
Like I'm paying more. Yeah.
Right, so that's when you get a special deal, because
the reason it gives. In all these cases, there's no explicit statement that the discount is because of giving the money up front.
No, then why are you...
You never say it. So why the discount? For a different reason. Number one, I could use up the entire Kartisia in one day. Right? Technically. People go, they bring a few friends with them. Oh, come on. You take three trips in a day, and then you have to have seven friends each time. So, I mean, you get the easy goes gone. So, we could go on a day, number one. It's the same day. No extra time.
But it's not alone.
Yes, I understand. Like the
number two,
the other one.
Another reason why the bus companies do it all the time. Because the chance you're going to lose the Kartisia. Who has ever lost the Kartisia? Raise your hand. There it is. It's a smart bus company, so they won't give you a cheap price. You're going to lose it. No, so that means the reason they're giving it to you for cheaper is not merely because they have the money in the pocket for earlier. But of other considerations, yes? It's Ribbis. I'll tell you how it's Ribbis. You give money to a bus company, Egged. You give them money, right? They're giving you back for 10 shkolim of money, they're paying you back 15 shkolim. Yeah, they're giving you Ribbis. That's the problem. You are lending Egged, how do you like that? Little you lending the big the cooperative Egged. You're the lender, they're the borrowers. That's the
I don't understand that. I don't understand why the lending is coming.
Because
it's
you're paying
for it. In the big child. What about the subscription to a newspaper or to a magazine? They say if you pay $2 an issue. You pay for the whole year in advance, they'll charge you only $18. Which would otherwise cost you $20 or $20
something. I think you should pay tuition. I think you should pay
every single thing. One second.
They need to do that in order to get business.
Oh. He doesn't like it. He's not happy with this. He's lenient in the case in which if the newspaper is a corporation, then maybe there's room to be more lenient. We said before corporations have more leniencies. Oh, so they say if it's a Haredi magazine, then it's okay. What's this?
He just doesn't
want to
read it.
This is a Bar Mitzvah. Yeah, it's a Haredi, or a book. It's unbelievable. What's Haredi? And who's Haredi?
Why?
Idiot.
All these cases are serious questions. Let's say you want to reserve a catering hall. And you want to pay in advance for less money. It happens all the time. I know the case, if you give them a certain X dollars in advance, they'll charge you less for the wedding and for the bar mitzvah. Really, it happens. It's a big problem. Complicated. When you get married, if it happens, you're going to call me up. Even buying a house is complicated. You know, you want from the kablan and this, and how much you pay in advance, how much you pay later on. You know what? Even renting things is complicated. Because renting can also involve you in ribbous situations. Only thing is, when it comes to renting, we have a lucky break. We catch a lucky break. What is that? Renting, according to the halakha, the payment does not become due until later on, until the end. Ein tzchiris mishtalemes el lebesof. It's only at the very end. So therefore, if you're giving a discount, so there's certain grounds to be a bit more lenient. So therefore, for example, if you rent by the month, you cost you $100 a month. If you rent for the whole year, $1,000. So it should be ribbous, right? Because we said you're making two prices. Well, in some cases, which is permissible, because it's a rental deal.
Lease
is right, exactly. Insurance, bingo, everything's water. That's a risk. Cool, right? So, next time we'll discuss some of the details of Hetheriska and some more laws of ribbous. Maybe we'll get to something else. I have the Shiloh camp, summer camp.